The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello everyone, this is BL. Welcome to our webinar here on esoteric astrology. In this webinar, Eva is going to continue going through the signs for you. You can see her there in the wave.
Hi there. Hi there.
And she'll take over the webinar in just a minute, but let me go through the normal stuff. You want to make sure that you're on mic and looking at all of our attendees. I see you all are, so that's good to know. Okay, noise protocols. We've got you all muted. Because there can be lots of echoes. So what we want to do is we want to keep you muted. If you raise your hand or if you type a question in, we will unmute you, let you speak to us. Please mute yourself again immediately after you've talked. If you don't, I probably will. Okay. This is how you put your hand up. Right here shows the arrow points in the direction that's available to you. So what this shows is that my hand is down and I have the opportunity to put it up. Okay? The green arrow means the hand is down. The red arrow means the hand is up. Okay? So it always points in the direction that you can make it go if you click on it, the other direction. So if you've got
BL, before you continue, BL, before you continue, I know I'm supposed to record this, but I don't see the record button anywhere on this dashboard.
Okay, it's up there under sharing.
Sharing.
Up at the top.
Uh-huh. It says change presenter. Oh, there it is. I am so sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, we're going. We're good. We're good.
Okay, all right. Okay, and on your muted, it's going to be red with a line through it when you're muted, which should be for all of you guys right now. And when we unmute you, it's going to look green, and you'll get a little notice. You'll get a little notice that says you have been unmuted by the organizer. Now, we'll also try and watch, because a lot of times you guys are on self-mute and we'll unmute you, but you still won't be able to talk because you're on self-mute. But we can detect that from our end, and we can try and help you if you have that issue. So we have patience with everyone, because we know you don't do this as often as we do. So. And then if you have any questions, there's a little question block down here. If you you can undock it by hitting this little gizmo right here, or you can just type your question in there, and then it will alert us that there is a question. You can also type things in the chat box. You know, both of them have a little send function there. So those are the options that you have: raising your hand, asking us a question using the question block or the chat block. And if we have something for you, we may send you a chat. We occasionally do that to the whole audience. So with that in mind, I'm going to turn it over to Eva so she can begin her presentation.
Show my screen. Okay.
We see connected to go to webinar right now. And we still see okay. Your...
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me get rid of all of this. Mm-hmm. I see that. And I see that. Okay. And I'm going to go to this. And I'm going to go to... Is that good?
It's okay. Oh, good. We would see it better if your webcam was off.
And that's what I'm going to do it right now. Yeah. So hello everybody and goodbye. So webcam. Let's turn it off. Hi. Does it say hide my webcam? Is that or stop? That's what it is. Oh.
Just click on the, there you go. It's gone.
There we go.
Gone.
Now it's okay. So
Okay.
I will go back to full screen
Okay, and
and
I just want to tell everybody the main reason that we have to do that, hide her webcam, is because it interferes with the webinar and it causes delays because the live streaming of the webinar versus the live streaming of the webcam. So we're sorry that we didn't get to leave it up too very long.
okay. So, with all that confusion, the technical stuff for me, I'm so glad BL is there as well as the rest of the admin team that helps us out so much, helps me out. I'm a little bit lacking in that ability. So here we are, and what we've done thus far, just to very quickly go over a few things, is we went through the first three signs. We went through Aries being cardinal. And then we went to Taurus, which is fixed. Then we went to Gemini, which is mutable. We are now going to start in Cancer, and that is cardinal. So we're going to be repeating the exact same way that we've just gone through these three crosses or modes, and the pattern repeats itself. So every three, it starts all over again. And that's an important thing to realize. If there's three of them that are on the crosses, then, and there are four crosses, we are going to see that pattern repeated. How many times? Four goes into 12. I'm sorry, three crosses into 12 is four times. See, even I get mixed up because then we look at elements. The first one being fire. Aries was fire, Taurus was earth, Gemini is air, and now we're going to move into water. So there's four elements, three crosses. So the same pattern gets repeated again. We're going to go into these patterns in much greater detail as we progress through these webinars. They are important, and they're important in order to understand how we get relationships within our chart. All relationships are based on the pattern in which we're talking about here, whether they be crosses, whether they be elements. So here we are looking at Cancer. And as you see in the picture in front of you, Cancer symbol is the crab. The crab, as we know, lives partially on the water, partially on the land, and it moves in a particular way. It's interesting to see these hieroglyphics here. They're certainly not circles, are they? They're jaggedy, zigzaggedy kind of lines, because that represents also the way in which a crab moves. It does not move in a straight line. It transmits the third ray. Its ruler is right here, the moon, on the exoteric, on the personality level. And the opposite, as we said last time, the opposites always play an important role, and that is Capricorn. So we're going to look now at some of the qualities of Cancer. Cancer, as I said, moves sideways. It zigzags its way, and therefore there's a slipperiness to Cancer. It is a water sign, so it is immersed to some degree in water. And water, as we know, refers to our emotional state. Water is more than just emotions. It's sensitivities. That which we sense through all our senses. It's got a nebulous quality to it as well. We see that Cancer's glyph right here, if we look carefully and if it was drawn slightly different, we would have these circles sort of parallel each other. And if we really allowed our eyes to look at them and we were together, I would ask you, what do those two circles represent? And hopefully you would say they represent breasts, which that is something that the Cancer energy is all about. It's a nurturer. It's a mother who nurtures their family, their infants. It's a sign of birth. And you see also within the glyph, it's almost closed. It protects that inside. And that's what a crab does. A crab, for those of you who eat crab, will know it's got a very hard outer shell, but yet the inside is very tender, very soft, very soft, moist, tender. And all those qualities we could say about Cancerian energy. It also has the pincers that it can grab things and hold on to things. We say that Cancerians don't really forget. They have an unbelievable memory. And that's because of the ability to hold through those pincers that which they take. So it says right here in a little thing, it's they're gatherers of basic resources. And they bring that into the womb, which is that enclosed shell, in order to protect. So cancer tends to want to protect everybody in within that family unit, within its unit is the good word here. And the unit could be the family, it could be a larger family, it could be an ashram, it could be a company, it could be any kind of group. There is that need to protect, hold in a comfortable place. The moon, as we said, is the exoteric ruler. The moon is not really a planet, neither is the sun. But in our astrology, we have given it attributes and characteristics as if it was a planet. And the characteristics that we give it are based on the way in which we see both the sun and the moon acting upon our planet and hence upon us. So the moon is associated with tides, the ebb and the flow of tides. And tides have to do with water, and water has to do with the emotions. So the moon generally represents our feeling and emotional nature. It doesn't matter in whose chart it is, but the fact that it is combined here with Cancer, and Cancer is already a water sign, makes it that much more watery, that much more emotional, that much more sensitive. See how we combine the two here? So another way of looking at what the emotions do is that it's our desire nature. Our emotions is what we want, what we desire. And we generally desire security, comforts, feelings that are good feelings. That's what we desire. Nobody wants to be in a feeling of strife or anger or frustration. So we want those things that will make us feel good and secure. We tend to say that the moon are the lines of least resistance because the moon is that which comes naturally to us, and that is of the past. The past is something we have already energized, we've already learned, we've already grown from, and the moon represents that past. And our tendencies are those which we do unconsciously. We don't think about them. Hence, the moon represents our lines of least resistance. And a lot of people don't understand those words. The lines of least resistance have to do with the natural way in which we resist. Oops, what happened here? Sorry. The natural way in which we move in life. We don't really resist the natural. It's habitual. It moves us. And hence, we don't have to stop and think. Therefore, these movements, these lines of least resistance, are unconscious. Hence, our moon represents our unconscious behavior within ourselves. Well, here's some more about the moon. It's how our feeling nature responds in the world. as we said, it's our emotions, it's how we feel safe and secure. And the very second from the end bullet point is one I'd like to read out loud, is Cancer, being water ruled by the moon, being emotions, has a watery emotional body that is subject to fluctuating emotional tides, moods, feelings, intangible sensations, and vague intuitions. And both the moon and Cancer are related to the past. Those that know anything about the previous solar system is the solar system where the intelligence aspect was grown and developed. The moon and the Cancer and Virgo were signs that came to us from the past. And of course, Cancer does transmit the third ray, the moon transmits the fourth ray. So now we're going to look at the esoteric ruler. And if I haven't said this before, I definitely want to say it now, that most of us are influenced by our exoteric or traditional rulers. They affect our personality. They affect our everyday life, our tendencies, what we think about, what we're doing, and so on, our mundane life. The esoteric rulers can only affect us if we have the consciousness to be able to receive its energies. And so, therefore, you already have to be a disciple. Have to already have soul contact, trying to really merge more soul into the personality. That's why we use the term soul infusion. And you have to be fairly well established in that to be able to use the influences of these esoteric rulers. And in the case of Cancer, we have Neptune, and you can see Neptune here, right there, known as the Lord of the Sea. And Neptune, there's a lot of qualities associated with Neptune, some on the what we call on the higher side, some of them on the lower side, because we appropriate these energies, and since they have to go through the filters of our personality, they're not always used in their highest way. So some of the less spiraled up ways of using Neptune, because it's watery and it's misty, and it's the way I like to see the, I'll go back to the previous picture here. No, I guess it's not there. It's coming up. There, it's the bottom one here. I like to see the mist over things. That's how I think many times do think of Neptune. Because it's the mists over the water, it can cause us not to see clearly. And therefore, it brings with it confusion, it brings with it uncertainty, and that which is nebulous, lacking clarity, basically. It can distort that which is real and bring with it illusion and delusion. It rules drugs. So people that have that kind of personality, that addictive personality, look for ways to escape. And they can escape in a variety of different modalities, one of them being drugs, and Neptune rules that. Of course, the rulers of the solar plexus, which is the seat of our emotions, is ruled exoterically by Mars. Mars is the god of war, it's anger, it's fight, it's strong energy, it's drive, it's push. It can also be courage. Well, the higher part of the solar plexus is ruled by Neptune, which takes in a much softer, a gentler way, and those emotions then would be more the sensitivity stuff, the ability to access the nebulous, that which isn't so obvious. It also can lead to denial. You deny people that are hooked on drugs will deny. People do not see themselves clearly, whether it is their inability to see their complexes, their inability to see the negativity within them, then they'll deny that it doesn't exist. Neptune helps with that very well. It can devitalize and sort of melt down the energies that we have, that the sun usually gives. When the sun shines through onto this mist, it actually disperses this mist. But when the mist is there, you feel very devitalized. And some of the more positive aspects of Neptune are the pure, pure love that Neptune is known for. Neptune is known as for the sea of love. It's universal, pure love and compassion. It's transcendent. Oftentimes, the mystical experience speaks to a Neptunian experience. It's blissful, it's beautiful, it's just undefined, visionary, and prophetic. Usually, water is associated with psychism. You can have lower psychism, you can have higher psychism. And psychism is another way of saying intuitiveness. It's not instinct, which is baser, but it's the higher spiraled up ability to be intuitive, thereby a wide intuitive understanding and being creative in one's imagination. Those people that have a very strong Neptune, of course, with other watery signs, could be very artistic and can express that artism. Here are some more images. Neptune gives us the sixth ray as well as the second ray. It's a transpersonal planet. It offers us the highest and the most universal love that humanity or a single person can experience or bring into the world. So, on its highest level, it is so transpersonal. It's not about me. It's not about my feelings, my emotions. It's about pure, pure love. It's the Buddha kind of love. And Neptune is closely associated with the heart. And where do we emit love from? We emit it from the heart. Where do we emit personal love? We emit it from the solar plexus. So the heart is really the seat of the soul, and the soul is really quite unattached. The kind of love we're talking about with Neptune is self-sacrificing love. It's a giving love. It's an understanding of all and totally unconditional. So, does that make sense? Do we have any questions so far on this? Any questions?
I don't see any.
Okay. Because I was told to please slow down, that I was moving too quickly last time, and would I go through this a little bit slower? And so that's my attempt to go slower, ask questions, clarify any areas that need clarification. And so I'm asking for questions as we move through this. Okay, so we'll go to Leo. Oops, I guess I have to do it this way. There we go. Leo. Leo, the king of the jungle, the roar of the jungle. Its opposite is Aquarius, and right now we find ourselves in Aquarius. There's a real link between, as I said, opposites. Between what Leo energy is and what the spiraled up energy of Aquarius is. Behind Leo, you see the sun. And why is the sun there? Because the sun rules Leo on all three levels. It rules it from the personality perspective, from the soul perspective, and even the higher perspective, which is the hierarchical. And we really haven't talked about that, and we're not going to, but it rules on all levels. One of the things that I'd like to go back to, let me see if I can do this without screwing everything up here, is to go back to the Cancer glyph. There it is. Now, for those of you, can you see my cursor here? The cancer glyph is like this. And cancer, one of the things I didn't talk about cancer is that it represents the crowd. It represents the masses. It is a sign of birth. And this is in cancer that we are told humanity was birthed or was born through the sign cancer. Well, in Leo, Leo stands above the crowd. So watch this. You have the glyph here, and if you lift it up above the cloud or above the crowd, there is a commercial for Remax above the crowd. You lift it up like that, you get the Leo glyph. Okay, so let me go down to Leo. And so we remember we saw that circle, and all we had to do was lift it up above the crowd. So that's what Leo is. It's about me. Look at me. It's individuality. Whereas Cancer was the crowd, it was the masses. Leo is a very important stage in our development as human beings because it is in Leo that we start to grow our individuality, our personality. This is where the personality becomes very effective in the world. It can stand on its own, which Leo is, because Leo lives on the mound of a jungle. He doesn't really associate with everybody else. He gets everybody else to do the work, and he is known as the king. And when the king is hungry, that's when the king eats. It's about individuality. An individual is divided into one. It is through Leo that we express ourselves. So it does take in self-expression. And how do we express? We express in a variety of different ways. One of the ways could be being creative. And so if it's about being in the center, and having all eyes look upon me, oftentimes we will see Leo subjects enjoying being on stage. And that's why you have this here. It's look at me, here I am. There's a certain pride associated with Leo, arrogance, pride, very much like the lion. As we said, the sun is the ruler of Leo. The sun represents life force as well as creative energy. It has warmth, it has vitality. The sun is dynamic. The sun nurtures and makes everything grow. It has everybody orbiting around it, right? All the planets orbit around the sun. The sun is in the middle, it's in the center. It represents the personal self, and whatever sign it is found in, it will represent our personality. So the Leo experience, the Leo ability to identify with oneself is so important in one's growth, as I've mentioned before. So every person is a miniature sun. Every person is a nucleus or a center for creative expression. What is the personality? The personality is the face that we put out into the world. It is the way others see us, what we are proud about, what we are inflated about, and what we are pleased with. The exoteric way of seeing the sun ruling Leo is that the sun in the heavens keeps everything orbiting around it. And like I said, it's look at me, I'm in the center, I'm the center of attention. And Leos can take command, they can rule, they can lead. It carries with it the first ray. And as you know, the first ray is one of leadership, one that can take on a leadership role. And so that kind of thing automatically seems to grow out of a Leo subject. They are also highly sensitive. So now the esoteric way in which to look at the sun in Leo. So I've got some good notes here. Why don't we go through them together? And then if you have any questions, we can address those as well. The sun in the heavens, it nurtures, it's magnanimous, it's generous. It enlivens those orbiting around it, much like it enlivens a plant. A plant cannot grow without the sun. The sun nurtures and gives vitality, energy, and life to all within its system. The sun sign is full of potential, like the amount of unused fuel still in the sun. And as we grow spiritually, we invite the fullness of ourself to be revealed. We invite fullness of growth and potential. We, of course, there's always the shadow side of the personality, which still needs to be illumined, so it allows us to see and work on self-improvement. So here's a little bit of repetition of what we said. So, in its esoteric position, it veils. And what is a veil? A veil is almost like a curtain. And what is behind the curtain is the way we have to look at the veiling that a planet does. In its exoteric position, we look at it as if it is a planet, and we take into account its characteristics that we normally associate with that particular planet. But in its esoteric position, we want to see what lies behind the sun here. What is it in fact veiling? And in the sign of Leo, it is veiling Neptune. Now, we've already looked at the various qualities of Neptune, so we know that Neptune has to do with transcendental love, pure love, compassion. So a magnanimous Leo person has such an open heart. That's why, was it Richard that was known as Richard the Lion-Hearted? He must have been a Leo, and the Lion-Hearted was the heart that was out there nurturing, giving, encompassing, and being compassionate to all. The Leo actually speaks about the heart, the center, whereas its opposite, Aquarius, speaks about the circulation of the blood. Okay, so before we move on to Virgo, any other questions, any other comments, anything that needs to be clarified a little bit more?
Yes, Michael has a question for you. Please go ahead, Michael.
Yes, Michael,
Hi.
hi.
Hi, Eva. Thank you for doing this again. You had said that the sun transmits the first ray.
Right.
Could you? I thought it was the second ray.
It's that as well. The sun transmits the first ray, the second ray, because in fact, all three rays are actually transmitted by the sun, but not that strong, because the sun is the planet that we see. That is the third aspect. The sun is the what is the central spiritual sun is the first aspect, so that would be the first ray, the power that is in the sun, and the solar sun is the second aspect. So yes, it can transmit all three. And
Okay.
in this position, in the position of being in Leo, with Leo being first ray, there's a resonance there. But yes, the second ray is just as strong because it is about the heart. It
So
depends.
it's looking at personality as three, soul as two, and monadic as one.
Right. Those would be the
Okay.
three aspects. And it does transmit all of that. It's just that I made the resonance, the relationship between the Ray One and Leo, because there is an affinity there with that.
Okay.
But yeah, the second rate would be just as strong. So thank you for making that connection.
Thank you for the clarification.
Anything else? Anybody else?
No, I don't see anything else. Thank you.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on to Virgo. Did we mention that a Leo was fire? I don't think I mentioned that. Leo is on the fixed cross, and it's opposite Aquarius, which is also on the fixed cross. Now we move into Virgo. Virgo is on the mutable cross. Its opposite is Pisces, and we see that in the picture down below here, the Piscean energy. Virgo, remember, or rather, mutability, remember, is just that. It's mutable, it's changeable, it's versatile. And in Virgo, what we do see, actually, let me back up. Let me go to the glyph here. See the glyph? It has two loops, almost creating a letter M. And then it's got a closed circle here, a closed area. This is representing the Mother Mary, could be, or it could be the M for any kind of mother that gives birth. And the closed circle here is the purity, the unbroken hymen of the virgin individual. Even the word Virgo has the beginnings of the word virgin within it. So there's something about purity very much associated with Virgo. Virgo is the place of the birth of the Christ principle, the Christ child within the womb of time. So it takes lifetimes and lifetimes to nurture the individual to grow to, when we say purify, we mean to do away with the lesser qualities within our three vehicles, right? Within the form, within the physical and etheric body, within the astral, and then even in the mental. So the more we purify, or the more we change our vices to virtue, the more we become ready to recognize that we've been nurturing all along the love principle that needs to then grow and be birthed within Virgo. Primarily, that is its mission. So in history, Virgo has been represented as Lilith, as Eve, Isis, and in this world period, it's represented as Mary. It's the feminine principle that allows for the growth or the gestation of the Christ principle within the cave of the heart. And hence, this particular glyph says it all. We're not going into the keynote here, but the keynote is a threefold keynote as well, just as this is threefold. And so when we, in the subsequent webinars, we will go through the keynote with greater intensity, and we'll see how the form, the life, and the Christ are all part of the keynote for Virgo. So Virgo is about the purity of the form. I've got that here, and I'm going to move on. Oh, some of the other little symbols here. It is ruled by Mercury, and Mercury is a mental planet. We talked a lot about Mercury when we looked at Aries. It's about the mind, and the ability of putting the mind with an earth sign in Virgo allows it to be very detailed, to be able to work with the particular, with the small. Of course, because it's earth, it works within the earth, and all these symbols are earthy symbols. But here you see someone working within an office using the mind, probably setting up structures and systems within the mind, and then the detail that is necessary here. Here we see the Christ child being born to the Virgin Mother. With Mercury, the mind is turned towards the matters of life, and therefore Virgo can look at the particular, the small, the detail with great precision. This leads to seeing that which is not pure. It sees what is not perfect, what does not fit the ideal, and therefore it cannot measure up to the ideal, to the purity that is seen in the Virgo way, whether it's in creating something and it's not pure, and therefore it's very critical of that which is not perfect, or whether it's another part of life, whether it's an essay that someone, I'm bringing in this right down to everyday life, create an essay and you see all the punctuation mistakes or the spelling mistakes. So it finds fault with that which is not perfect. And hence it's got a reputation of being critical and being very picky, because it's always going for the purity, the ideal, that which is the high, that which is the archetype, whatever it is, on whatever level. Purity in our everyday life leads to the professions that deal with health. Health, bringing the body, the form, to a state of perfection so that we can birth the Christ within. Hence, you will find many professions like doctors, dentists, dental hygiene, massage, all the various modalities that bring about good health, because we're trying to bring the form to a level of perfection. On an esoteric level, what is it that that Virgo rules? It rules the moon. I don't know if this is the best picture I could find for the moon, but I guess that's supposed to represent something that looks like the moon. And the moon on an esoteric level veils. It veils. The moon is known as the mother of form. And here in Virgo, being an earth sign, we are dealing with form. So what kind of planets would this particular moon veil? And this is where a perceptive astrologer has to have a sense of where someone is at in their point of evolution, because it veils Vulcan. And we did Vulcan. We talked about Vulcan when we looked at the ruler of Taurus esoterically, and or it would veil Neptune. And we talked about what Neptune is like. So which one would it be? You'd almost have to have a pretty good idea of what the person's life is like, how they are esoterically, how they are spiritually, to be able to ascertain, is it Vulcan or is it Neptune? But because the moon is in the esoteric ruler, we have to look at that which lies behind it. When the moon was in the position of being the exoteric ruler in Cancer, we looked at the attributes of the moon. Here, we don't. We look at the mother of the form. What lies behind that form? Okay, any questions?
I don't see any right now.
Okay, now why do I have a flat chart here? This is basically a circle divided into 12, and each division is known as a house. We're not going to go into the details of this here, because we will spend many other webinars detailing how to go about looking at the chart. But what we want to look at here is we start with Aries. We've gone this way. Here is Virgo. And then the next sign that we're going to look at is Libra. And this is known as the horizon. It's that horizontal line. And so in Libra, we start to rise above the horizon. Up till now, we have been, all the signs that we've looked at have been below that horizon. The sun self, the personality, has been growing has been learning the various qualities of all the signs, everything that the signs have to give it. And it's always been about me, about the personal self. We call that being subjective. In Libra, it begins to move above the horizon. Until it begins to be sufficiently above, and then it becomes objective and starts to include others, another. And this is what we see here in the glyph. We see that the sun self has risen above the horizon and now can include another. It's supposed to be eventually for a Libra that the other is more important than the self. And these two parallel lines show the duality within Libra. It's myself and the other. So the symbol for Libra are the scales, and the scales are never usually balanced like this. Usually the fulcrum here, it takes a lot of decision making. It's an air sign. It's on the cardinal cross. It's about using the mind, and it's about decisions and choices, and it's often goes from one side to the other, and so on, back and forth and back and forth. And those decisions can create a lot of conflict within the mind, so that a Libran can be very indecisive. It is transmitting the third ray. The third ray is the ray of intelligence, as we know, active intelligence. And these scales are active. They go up and down. Or if you had a pendulum here, it would swing from one side to the other, till eventually it would right itself. And that's what the goal is, to look for that point of equilibrium, harmony that the Libran wants to create and achieve. Its opposite is Aries. And many times, Librans can use a little bit of Aries energy, that drive, that strong, that power that is in the Aries sign. The most important thing for the Libran, according to the Tibetan, is to learn what is right human relations. What is right human relations? It is what is right for me as well as for someone else. Many Librans do not want to have conflict. They want everything to be in harmony, everything to be in a state of equilibrium, and hence they will compromise for the sake of keeping peace. And that's a really important area of growth for Librans, to learn what is right in human relationships, not what keeps the peace, not what keeps what I understand to be harmony. So that's a good insight into Libra. Libra is ruled. Oh, I'm not going to get to the ruler yet. I want to talk about the sign itself and the symbol itself. It is usually depicted as a person, not an animal. The air signs are usually, they're always depicted by human beings. Why? Because the air signs have to do with the mind. And human beings in this cycle, in this world cycle, have to learn to use the mind. They have to learn the manas, the mind aspect, in order to, number one, harness the emotions, number two, to be able to contact the soul, which dwells upon the plane of mind. So the human symbol will apply to all the air signs. In Libra, we see the woman holding the scales, and she's blinded. Why is she blinded? She is blinded because when one is blinded, one cannot see clearly. And because you don't see what's in front of you, you don't have to become impressed by the way a person looks, by so there's you don't judge a person by their looks, by the wealth, by their color. In other words, you stay totally impartial, and no judgment has to do with true justice. One can therefore be objective. And in ancient times, the sword that she's holding represented authority, and where justice was swift and final. Also, the scales, if you go back in the time of Egypt, in ancient Egypt, the god Anubis weighed the deceased's heart against a feather of truth. And of course, you know, if the heart was too heavy, then the person was considered to have done wrong. Now, it is ruled exoterically on the personality level by Venus. Venus, as we know, and we've done this before when we were looking at Taurus and then Gemini. In Gemini, it was the esoteric ruler. In Taurus, it was the exoteric ruler. In Venus, it's also the exoteric ruler. It's about love, love in relationships. Primarily, that's what it is in Libra, loving another. And we come back to the whole idea of right relations. Esoterically, then. What would it be esoterically? It would be Uranus. Uranus is also considered a mental planet. So Venus is a mental planet. Even though it had to do with love, its energies or its rays are ray 2 and ray 5. So there is this Venusian quality associated with Venus. You almost can't get away from its ability to be beautiful mind, even though it's, you know, it's love and it's about beauty and it's about beauty in terms of the person. So many Librans, the whole idea of judging plays an important part for Libra. So they want to be judged as attractive, as beautiful. Again, it's the Venusian energy. They want to judge others in the way that they look. My mother was also a Libra, and she used to constantly judge a book by its cover, constantly. And myself as a Libra too, I had a hard time with that because I used to think that there's got to be more to the person than just the way the person looks. So there's a whole thing about judgment associated with Libra. Uranus, being also a mental planet, works in the mind totally differently than Venus. Uranus comes in like lightning. It's unpredictable. It has a flash of light associated with it. So it can bring into the mind that intuitive understanding and knowing. It many times is considered visionary because suddenly there might be this flash of insight. It's electrical in energy. And as we said, like lightning, it's totally unpredictable. And lightning, as we know, when it hits something, it shatters it. It destroys it. Well, Uranus does the same thing. It can come in and actually shatter the old concepts that we have. It can destroy the structures that we have built up. And it works on reorganizing the old for the new. Here's some more ways in which seeing Uranus, totally unconventional, very, very unique, different, inventive, insightful, radical, eccentric, revolutionary. And so we have a light bulb here because that would bring in the idea of electricity and the light coming on in the mind. We have a lightning bolt, because it can shatter, it can hit, it can come in with flashes. Uranus's revolutionary qualities is a mover and a shaker, and it tends to overturn Libra's existing status quo. And why do I say status quo? Because Libra likes everything to be in peace, in harmony, in what they perceive as harmony. Therefore, they don't want to turn over the apple cart. They don't want to make waves. They don't want to change the status quo because the status quo is what they know. And that is, even though it may not be the best, it is what they know. And if you start to shake things up, it can unravel and make someone feel very uncomfortable. Well, Uranus's job is to do just that. And so, in many respects, having Uranus as an esoteric planet for Libra is the best thing Libra could have. So, is there any more here? I have no. Any questions so far? Because Uranus is a it's a lot to take in, the Uranian energies. Even in the heavens, Uranus's planet, it has its apex, its point, its north pole, so to speak, facing the sun. It lies on its side with the top of the head where energy, higher energy flows in at the top of the head. So for Uranus lying on its side with that opening facing the sun, it gets direct energy from the sun to then, use it in the particular way that it does. So again, I'm opening the floor up to questions, any areas of clarification, comments.
I don't see any questions or comments yet
Okay.
because everything is crystal clear.
Okay. Thank you.
Actually, as usual, you're able to bring it down into easy to understand terms.
I hope so. I'm trying. I mean, I want people to walk away really getting a sense of what these energies are like and why they work so well. So I may jump around a little bit, but in the end, I hopefully cover everything that needs to be covered. Okay, we're going to move on to the next sign.
Hold it. We got a question from Helen. If Uranus is located in quite a few houses, how is the energy affected?
I don't understand how it can be located in quite a few houses. It's located only in one house per chart, right?
Okay, I think I was wrong.
Okay, so Uranus, it'll appear somewhere on one's chart, and then we have to figure out, well, it's the ruler of, and is this the esoteric ruler of Libra? Because we will later on learn that it's also the exoteric ruler of Aquarius. So then we look to see, as a ruler of Libra, as a ruler of Aquarius, where is it? What's its relationship to the sign that it rules? What is its relationship within the chart to other planets that it can have a relationship with? But it only will appear once.
Okay, I would also like to add here that it only appears once in the natal chart, but all of the planets continue to move, and that's what we call transits. So from time to time, Uranus is going to come along and it's going to ping something else in your natal chart as it transits some of those other houses, and it's going to act like it's acting here. It's going to be totally unexpected. Something's going to come out of the blue and it's going to knock you for a loop because that's the way Uranus, this rebel, this unconventional planet, works.
It'll make you stand on your head. Exactly. It'll just t turn you upside down. It's not a comfortable energy when it hits you, as BL says, in transit, when it pings or comes in relationship with something that you've been living with for a long time and suddenly shatters everything for you. It's quite the awakener, and that's not comfortable. No matter how you look at it, it's not comfortable. And a lot of people go through a difficult time when that happens. And because Uranus is so far away from the sun, its orbit is a large orbit, and therefore it moves very slowly. The larger the circle, and you have one little planet on that particular circle or elliptical or whatever shape it is, it's moving very, very slowly as it's making its as it's making its movement all the way around that sun. And then we go into other problems. Sometimes it looks like it's going direct, and sometimes it's going backwards and it's going direct again. So it'll stay in a particular sign for a long time. And if that is impinging on something within your chart, you're going to get that energy for a long time. And if it's uncomfortable, I guess it's uncomfortable for quite a while. Kind of, does that make sense? Okay. So now we move to Scorpio, the Scorpion. What do we know about the scorpion? The scorpion is poisonous. If it stings, it really, really can hurt. So that's to keep in mind with the whole idea of Scorpio. The Scorpio can hurt depending on who's using the energy and how they're using the energy. Its opposite is Taurus, and you see here Taurus. It is because they're opposites, and we know that Taurus is on the fixed cross. We know that Scorpio is on the fixed cross. It is a water sign as well. And its ruler right here is Mars. Mars is according to the DK's rulership exoterically. And Pluto is also a ruler exoterically, but Pluto refers more to the masses as opposed to so much the individual. I know that can get a little confusing, and I apologize for that, but both rulers are usually considered. Now, when we look at the glyph of Scorpio, I wish I had been responsible for creating these wonderful glyphs, but I'm not. And if I had it to do, I would turn the arrow upward like this, because that arrow goes below the line and back up again, that it can actually sting, and it can look a little bit like the arrow here of Mars. See? Because the whole idea with Scorpio, being that it's water, waters in Scorpio run very deep. Here, the depths. They run very, very deep. And usually that which is lying deep within the water, whether it is things that we are not conscious of, things we've stored away, I'd like to even use the word treasures. It could be anything that's hidden deep in the waters. When we look down into the deep waters, we can't see what's doing there. We don't know what is hidden deep. So our mission is to try to bring up to the surface that which lies deep so that we can see it in the light of day. Primarily, that's what the energy of Scorpio wants to do. It can go deep. It can see what's eventually there, but it can only see it once it can lift it up. Makes for an excellent, excellent researcher, right? And that which we're not all that conscious of, it's lying in our subconscious, it's lying in our unconscious. We don't see clearly because we're not conscious of it, right? It's lying there somewhere. Hence, without seeing things really like they really are, it can lead to distortions, to illusions, to not being able to move within the clarity and within the light. Does that make sense? All of those attributes are attributes of Scorpio before I've even started to talk about the ruling planets. We have here a bird of prey, and the bird of prey is here because Scorpio has the eyes that can pierce and look and see what's doing there. It can actually see what's doing in someone else's heart, and it can draw it out. Hence, see the eyes are here because it is known as having very magnetic quality to their eyes, piercing eyes. You know what? It's even considered sexy eyes. It can draw people in. And the eyes are what we use in order to see, to have the clarity. Now it's interesting in this picture over here, you have a mirror, and the mirror is a reflection of the real. And hence, because of the water quality to this, and because things are hidden, it's not really, and you don't see it clearly, it's a reflection of the real. This is where you have all the illusions. So all these symbols will represent different aspects of Scorpio. This one here, it's got a light, like a miner's light on the head. It's to be able to try to see what's there, try to see what's hidden. Hence, it makes a good researcher and a good person to discover through research that which lies hidden. Pluto is more the conventional ruler, but it does rule more the humanity en masse as opposed to really personal individual. So some qualities of Pluto here, because we haven't yet talked about Pluto, and it doesn't mean all of this applies right now to Scorpio, because usually the energy works hand in hand with the sign that it's in. But let's just look at the energies associated with Pluto. Pluto is a first ray planet. It is about personal power and control issues, right? Power gives you control issues. Pluto brings about transmutation, transformation, and resurrection. Why? Because for those of you who know any of the mythology, Pluto represents the underground, and it's the lord of the underground. And that which lies low needs to come up in order to be seen. And so you can see that the energy of Pluto wants to do very much a similar action to the energy of Scorpio, wants to bring up that which is there, hidden in the dark, in hell, in the bottom there, to be able to be seen. And it is known as transformation, and in transformation, it's the experience of death and rebirth. That is what transforms us. It's the eliminator. It's because of its first ray energy, it can really be very destructive. It can annihilate. And create shadows. One of the things about Pluto, and the same thing applies to Scorpio, it can hang on to secrets very well and can be very mysterious. Again, because of that which is hidden. Power over others through fear and manipulation uncovers and reveals that which is hidden. It's the redeemer, and it's known as the spiritual will when it's used properly. So Pluto has to do with one's personal will. How does one use it? Do you use it to control other people? That's why you have control issues, to control yourself. And it's about power. Pluto is all about power. Power over others, over circumstances, and powerlessness. It can really bring fear to others. So I have some stuff here in that square down below. Pluto is secretive. It's the hidden. It's that which does not want to be accepted or known. Pluto is the unearther, delving deep and dredging up that which lies beneath. Pluto brings the process of resurrection, lifting the dead within us to life. I want to actually still speak about, before moving on, I want to speak a little bit more about Scorpio. I do have Mars. Scorpio symbol is the scorpion. It is that which can bite, poison, and hurt. Many Scorpio, which, you know, they have the ability to see what's doing in within you, how to manipulate, how to use it for personal gain, for personal reasons, has control over other people. It is ruled by the scorpion. On a higher turn of the spiral, as the Scorpio individual starts to use the soul, starts to be much more soul infused, the next symbol is the eagle. And the eagle can fly high, and the eagle eyes can see the prey, right? And can swoop down, right down to its prey, pick it up, and bring it up, lift it up from the bottom, lifting it right up. But that ability to hover, to see, to have the eagle eye. On the highest turn of the spiral, the symbol for Scorpio is, I'm just drawing a blank, the phoenix, I'm sorry. It took me a few moments to bring it to my consciousness, the phoenix. And the phoenix is the bird that is burned and then comes back to life again. So this is where you get the transformation, the redeemer, the transmutative quality associated with Scorpio and Pluto there as well. Now, there's you have the eagle. You have a snake here because, you know, it can poison too, just like the scorpion can bite and poison. You have here, I don't know if you can see this. This is Mars. And then you have the red planet associated with Mars. And why do I say Mars? Because we're going to look at Mars. Mars is the planet that is also exoteric as well as esoteric. It's in two places for Scorpio. Mars is not considered a sacred planet. So if it's not a sacred planet, how are we going to see its energies used? Well, on the lower turn of the spiral, because if it is a planet that is the ruler of the personality, it can be that which is the warrior, the fighter, the one that's ambitious and can use its power and its strength to get what it wants. On the higher turn of the spiral, we see that Mars stands for conviction, for even discipline and forthrightness. It can be the power to be fearless, being able to stand up for others, even in the face of harm to oneself. Can you see the courage and the strength associated with Mars if it's used by a fairly evolved person? Mars and Scorpio can go into the depths of the un and subconscious and bring it to the surface. Mars has the strength and the courage to move into those deep, hidden depths so that in Scorpio, one can emerge triumphant. And that is why many therapists will have a strong Scorpio quality to them. Could be sun, moon, or ascendant. It could have a few planets in Scorpio, because it has the ability to go into another person's unconscious, subconscious, hold them by their hand, help them deal with their issues, because that's usually what's buried, isn't it? One's issues, one's fears, and help them overcome. And when they overcome, they can in fact say, warrior, which is Mars, am I? And from the battle, I emerge triumphant. So for many Scorpio people, there is constant battle. It's the battle is with themselves, not so much with another, but within themselves to battle their own demons. I think that's all I'm going to say on Scorpio, unless there's more questions, places that require greater opening up more, talking a little bit more about it. So please don't hesitate with your questions or comments.
Well, they're hesitating right now. I don't see any questions or comments, so...
Oh, the other thing, let me say a few more things about Scorpio. I just remembered that I should say. It's the sign of testing. And it's the disciple's sign. It We are constantly working on bettering ourselves, on infusing more soul into our personality. And no sooner do you think you have licked a habit, licked an unwanted way of being, then Scorpio will test you. This is the disciples' testing ground, constantly being tested. Have we in fact surmounted? Have we become triumphant? Can I be the disciple? Can I be counted on? These are all Scorpio goals to be able to achieve, to be able to be tested and pass the test. So early on in Taurus, it was about the desire nature and satiating one's desire. Here it is about, sure, it's still desire, but it's desire to overcome that which I've accumulated, that which I have made as part of myself so that I can be a better individual. And for that, it requires a tremendous amount of strength, Pluto, courage, Mars, to be able to come out of that darkness. Now, Scorpio also rules the mafia. Scorpio rules advertising, because how often is advertising really truthful? If anything, it's deceptive. So we see Scorpio around us in the world and in our life. Charles Manson, he was a Scorpio personality. Look at the control that he had over his followers, how he could manipulate them and get them to do what he wanted them to do. It was the sinister, it was the black, it was the dark side of Scorpio. And I'm not going to take that away from Scorpio. It does have a dark side, but it also has the warrior side. It also has the triumphant side. It has the side that wants to help other people because it can see what someone else is going through because they've gone through it themselves. That's Scorpio. It's a fantastic sign because it's so misunderstood. It's such a misunderstood sign. Anyway, I'll move on.
Before you do,
Yes.
I did get a question last time after the fact, and I meant to ask you about it, and now is the perfect time to do it. You are very good about bringing out the negative qualities and the positive qualities, and you mentioned in last month's that DK actually says that's something that we need to do. Do you actually have a reference for that, or is it just because he always points things out like that to us?
That's what he does. He points out to us the unevolved individual versus the more evolved individual. And he makes it very, very clear to us that what it looks like when we're unevolved, that it has to do basically with selfishness, with about oneself, with about needing to grow, needing to learn. Those are the ways in which we mature. The word mature is used in an esoteric way. I don't mean getting old. I mean growing soul-wise. So yeah, he's constantly pointing that out. I think we had a little discussion before we came on air here that every time there's a full moon or we go into a new sign, I like to read what DK says about that sign. I had dropped it for about 10 years, but I'm back to doing it again. And every time I read his words, I learn something new. And in the sign Aquarius, he goes into such great lengths telling us what an unevolved Aquarian is versus an evolved Aquarian, how an unevolved Capricorn is versus an evolved Capricorn. So we see the valley and the heights of the mountaintop experience, all within the possibilities of an individual.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I've done the same thing because he does. He goes into great detail to tell us the negative and the positive, and to show us, you see it in Hercules especially, how you evolve through, and we all go through that to some extent. I don't know about you guys, but you know, I've got this Ray 5 mind, so I like to rack and stack everything. And I love going through these negatives and positives and then saying, oh, I think I've worked through that. I think I've worked through that. Oops, I've been accused of that a time or two. And, you know, it just gives you a good picture of where you are overall and what work you still have left to do. So I do think it's very important. So thank you for pointing that out multiple times.
And it's sobering to be able to do that, to be able to see, you know, I can still work on that. I can still work on that, you know, and we have a little bit of everything in us. You know, we're not, if we don't have those particular signs in this incarnation, we've had them in the past, we'll have them in the future. So we picked up a little bit of all of them, you know. So as we go through this, I'm sure people can relate to a little bit of everything. Okay. We're going to move on to Sagittarius. Sagittarius is a mutable sign, and it is a fire sign. Now, this particular depiction here, this symbol, shows us Sagittarius as a centaur. This is the center, which during the mythical times, it was half human and half animal. And DK tells us we've actually evolved from this symbol. We're no longer looking at ourselves or looking at Sagittarius as a centaur. Now we look at Sagittarius as sitting on the white horse, you know, being the one that's the quest, like going on a quest, sitting on a white horse, and no longer attached or being or having that animal quality as part of who we are. So we've come a long way in our own evolution, but this particular symbol doesn't show us that. But let's look at what it does show us. It shows us the arrow that the centaur is holding, and the arrow is pointed up. That's an important thing to recognize, that the arrow is pointed up. And so when one looks up, usually what does that symbolize? It symbolizes to us that whatever we're going for is way up there. And what is normally up there? It's the ideal. The ideal is held high. And we want to shoot the arrow to target that ideal. And they're known as arrows of truth, by the way. And they move up towards that target, towards the ideal that's held so high. The animal, the horse, is a wonderful symbol for Sagittarius. It rules, by the way, the haunches, the thighs, the biggest muscles within our body, where the strength to leap and the strength to gallop and to go and to travel is in our legs. And this, the horse, you know, have any of you had business with a horse? A horse can run and run and run and run. And even if there's a cliff there, it'll run off the cliff. A horse needs blinders because it's so easily distracted from one side to the other, but it just keeps running and running and running. Well, the arrows are narrow and they point to a goal. The blinders on a horse keep one focused and pointing towards wherever the horse needs to go. Forward, 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 forward. If the blinders were off, it would be too much distraction. All of these are qualities of Sagittarius. You notice that the twins are there, the opposite, which was Gemini. I'm going to move to the next slide here. So Sagittarius is about shooting the arrows of truth towards the goal. It's fire. So there's so much enthusiasm associated with Sagittarius. Sagittarius is buoyant. It's lively. They're fun to be with. They love adventure. You see this person climbing, person on a horse. This is actually more the symbol now for but the horse should have been white for the new Sagittarius individual. They love to discover, to try the new, and explore. And traveling is such an important part of Sagittarius. Pegasus here is another symbol. Flying high, it has to do with higher learning, higher achievement. Here you have the area of learning, a teacher speaking to a student, because Sagittarius is very much connected with the ability to teach. Why? Because it is ruled by Jupiter. Jupiter is the largest planet in our solar system, so it's the most of everything. It's the one that is too much of everything. It is usually joyful. It's a rate two planet. It usually represents the soul in our chart. I mean, it's such a positive. It's really a positive planet. There's playfulness associated. It's about the heart. It's about expansion. It's about inclusivity. If you have a lot of Jupiter, you could be the philosopher, because again, it's about reaching high. And what is high? Philosophy, higher math, higher learning. It's all what is considered high up there. And spirituality as well. Now, the only negative that we can say about Jupiter, I had said it was too much. It can be too much of anything. So too much of overindulgence, too much of inflation. You know, you think really much more of yourself than you are. Or, you know, you embellish a story, or you embellish something for whatever reason you want to. It exaggerates. It's extravagant. And because Sagittarius, with Jupiter ruling it, is the individual who sees life through rose-colored glasses, because Jupiter conveys the sixth ray, actually it conveys six, five, and four, but we'll just look at the sixth ray right now. And the sixth ray, with all this optimistic quality associated with Jupiter, leads one to think in terms of good fortune and gambling and luck and optimism and joviality and, oh, I'm not going to worry about that. I'll get there on time, and therefore they're always late. Things will work out. I'm not concerned about that. So it lacks practicality many times because of this optimistic perspective on life. It's the broadest magnetic field. So it broadens our scope and our influence that we have over everything. Our perspective is large. Largesse is a good word here. It sees the ideal and wants to bring the ideal to others. So just if your eye has not gone down here, all these things basically say the same thing. It amplifies, it's joyful, it's hopeful, it's good-natured, friendly, applies love wisely and wisdom. Oh, that's another good word for Jupiter, is wisdom. Wisdom is a good word. So that's the exoteric ruler of Sagittarius. Now let's look at the esoteric ruler. The esoteric ruler is Earth, and it's an excellent ruler for Jupiter. And if you look at the centaur is holding his arrow pointing down into the earth. Why is that so important? Why is that good? Because it can actually ground the teachings that it receives way up there, the higher learnings, the higher teacher, it can ground that and make that available to other people. And believe it or not, many Sagittarians need to be grounded. The earth is where practical lessons must be learned. It gives us the groundedness that is necessary, the ability to change conditions, to be selective, resourceful, and great resilience. Why? Because the earth conveys the third ray, And these are a lot of these are qualities of the third ray. So you combine the earth together with Sagittarius and what it receives, it is important for bringing a philosophy, a concept, a higher concept, so that others can get it and understand it. That's why they make very good teachers, because they have the ability to ground the material that they receive, the intuitive, because it's very intuitive, the insights that it gets, can ground it and make it applicable. So this is where our experience is here on Earth. Any thoughts and any questions? Because this one I didn't take as long as some of the others.
I don't have any questions or hands yet, but Joe did make a comment. She says, thank you for being so thorough and comprehensive. She says she loves your slides and your explanations.
Well, thank you, Joe. So I'm looking at the time. It looks like it's 4:30. It's a good time here to stop, because we've stopped at Sagittarius. We will only have Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. We'll have three more to do, and then we can wrap this part of the presentation up, and we can then start moving on to more things. Now we can start putting things into play. We try to see the patterns. We try to see where all this fits in. But it's important to understand how the energies of the signs are, or I'm not saying that well, what the energies of the signs are, how the ruling planet works with the sign, because what it does is it acts. To me, the word ruling is like an agent. It's an agent of the sign. And what does an agent do? It works for the sign. So it works for somebody, right? So it helps us understand a lot better, because that same planet in a different sign has a different job to do, and it works a little bit differently. So understanding how that particular ruling planet works within a sign, I think, is a very important piece to know more about that sign. Da-da-da-da. Any more?
No, I don't see any more questions or anything. What I'm going to do is I'm going to unmute everybody just so you can say good night, good morning, goodbye, okay?
And before we do that, let's talk about when we're meeting again.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We are meeting again on the 10th of March. We are actually still in standard time. On that Saturday, but that is actually the night that we switch into daylight savings time here in the U.S. I know in Europe they go into it a little bit later, but here we jump the gun. So 10 March, Saturday, will be the next one.
Uh-huh, and this is going to be available, recorded, and it's on the Makara US, and
right.
It is.
I have to say it's probably going to be a little bit late. Brett is ill. He is our guy who cleans everything up and splits out the audio. So if people just want to listen to it, so that we have both the video if you want to do the whole thing, just the audio if you want to listen to it in a car or whatever, and then we'll also have the slides. But he's the one who puts it on Makara, and he's got the flu right now. So everybody, please keep Brett in your prayers, and we'll get it. He'll post an announcement when he can. So.
Okay, very okay. Good.
Uriana says, thanks today for everyone. I look forward to the upload of the video. She lost connection multiple times. So anyway, Michael, you're self-muted, but everybody else can say goodbye before we end.
Not Michael Robin?
No.
No.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you all.
It was excellent.
Thank you. I hope it, you know, it's easy to understand. That's what I'm trying to do, make it as easy as possible.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So much they have to understand. You don't get it all in one shot.
Yeah.
But, that's right.
They heard you, Mom.
And Bibi, I can't. You are unmuted, but you're also self-muted, so we can't hear you if you're there. I know it's probably pretty late for you there, but okay. Well, thank you, everybody. We're wrapping up this part of it, and as Eva said, we've got lots more information to give you, and everybody will have a chance, should they wish, to delineate their own chart with the help of Eva and me. So hope to see you on the 10th of March. Goodbye.
Blessings to everyone.
Thank you.